Hello.
Nice voice.
So, we'll start off on this note. I was sick last week.
Yeah.
I don't really feel that sick anymore, but my voice is not the usual. So, we're going to scrape
through
this.
I know all morning I feel like I should whisper back at you.
I know. I feel like I can't wait another day to see if my voice is better because I'm going to be gone for this weekend. So, if it's distracting for you people listening, I apologize in advance for the voice situation.
It'll be good.
So what's up? What's new and fresh?
Lots of hockey.
Yeah, you saw a family day game, eh?
Yeah.
How's that?
It's fine.
Yeah. In Guelph, how's the good crowd?
Always a good crowd.
Even on the, well, I guess family day, but
sold
on a Monday.
The place is sold out every game.
What a great
rink.
With
the exception of you see a seed here and there.
Yeah.
But it's sold out every game.
What
it's
a
amazing.
Great rink.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I was looking at, we're going away to New York this weekend, and we're going to go watch a Division I game, so we're going to see Union College versus Harvard on Friday night.
Where is Union out of? Syracuse?
It's right around like Albany, Syracuse. I forget exact. We're staying around Troy.
Okay.
Troy, New York.
Yeah.
And I think the closest is Albany. That could be wrong. But it's Syracuse or Albany, one of those two. And it's right in there. So there's Union and there's RPI.
Yeah.
Are the two. So we're going to go see Union Harvard. The reason I bring it up is they're rank old school, like a barn.
Unions.
Union.
Yeah.
And like you can see all the beams up top and all this kind of thing.
Yeah, that'll be great.
And they have the stands on both sides, but none at the ends, like behind the net. Right. So it's not bowl seating.
Yeah.
So it's just like
what night's that? Saturday or Friday?
It's a Friday night.
Awesome. That'll be
Friday
fun.
Night game. So Harvard's gonna be there Friday, and then we're gonna go or try to go Saturday to tour the RPI campus, which is like 15 minutes the other way.
Yeah.
So it should be like a pretty cool experience. But the old school barn, I'm looking forward to seeing. I don't know what kind of crowd they would get there necessarily, but it's not a huge rink, but.
I'm sure it's good.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm not sure, actually. Probably good, though.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure it's going to be good hockey either way. Harvard's a good team for sure. So I don't know much about Union College, though.
I know it's one of those colleges that I don't know a lot about, but they typically have some good teams.
Yeah, for sure. So
for sure.
So that's that.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by the PowerTech Online Membership Program. If you've been listening to Andy and I wondering, hey, how are they able to get all this podcast content out there? Well, that's because of our members. For just $9.99 a month, you can get access to our online video library, including hundreds of videos of Coach Andy teaching, and have the option for consultation calls with Andy or myself to go over anything you need. We can cover training, nutrition, coaching, parenting, agents, the junior college hockey path, whatever's of interest to you. You'll also be able to participate in our popular Ask Me Anything episodes, have access to special discount codes, and be given priority for any PowerTech in-person camps or events. If you like what we're doing here and you want to support us, this is the best way to do it. Visit powertechhockey.ca/memberships or find the link in the description of this video to learn more.
I got a bit of a hard stop today, so I'm going to just jump in here. I wanted to talk about, let's talk about why I want to talk about the topic. So I was having a conversation with some of our guys that are helping us with running this academy, and we're trying to decide, we're talking about deciding on where to play and like which teams to play, what kind of games to prioritize, what kind of tournaments to prioritize, and all this kind of stuff. And I was saying this to you earlier today. It's funny when you talk to people who have kids playing or are really in it, where I can see how you can get sucked in, where it's hard to like zoom out and see the bigger picture of things. And so we're talking about who we should play and what teams to play and all this kind of stuff. And to me, when I'm listening to this conversation, I'm kind of like, I don't think it really matters that much as long as you're playing a mix of teams and it's the highest level you can play and the competition is pretty good. Like, does every single game need to be against the best team in Ontario or the best team in Michigan or whatever? So that kind of conversation was kind of sparked my inspiration for this episode, because I know a lot of people get really caught up in that kind of stuff, like who we play, what teams we're playing, where we're playing, and the look of it. And so I wanted to start on that note for you, is kind of get your thoughts on how important it is to play the best teams, or like how high of like competition do you need to be playing in order to do the things that people worry about, like get exposure, make sure scouts are there watching, etc. Because the answer is not, it doesn't matter. And it's not, it always matters. It's obviously something in the middle. So I just want to get your thoughts on that, because it's something I'm hearing more and more of. And I feel like people are getting caught up on the wrong thing, thinking it's the most important
at
the time. So kind of what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think you answered probably the way I would too, is I don't think you can, Well, first of all, you don't necessarily know what type of team you have until you start playing, right? So that could be an issue right there. You could think you're a lot better than you are, and then you're not that good, or vice versa. I think it's important to have a mix for sure, because in both all three situations, really good competition, mediocre competition, and playing a lousy team, or maybe you're the lousy team, whatever. I think there's a place that reveals a lot of things about your team, no matter what. So I think that in itself is important, that you play whoever. And if you happen to be a good team, then of course you want to measure how good you are. So if you can get games against really good, high competition, that's better for everybody, because it gets you, like especially if you're a team, if you're not playing in championship games or those really important games. So if you're playing top teams, it could be something where it's like a championship game where you got to make sure that you're up a little bit, so it could test your mental attitude or your mental toughness, because that's a good measure to find out if you get way too amped up for a game or not, just to see how you deal with that pressure. But I think it's always good to play against a team that's really good, because it's a good measuring stick for yourself to say, okay, we've got a long way to go, or we don't. Or you see players that, oh, wow, I didn't know a guy like that existed. You know, some good eye openers. And it's good to test your systems and all that kind of stuff. So that's good. Playing just equal competition is always good as well. So that, for obviously reasons that you can't take it easy, and you got to play a hard game to know that you're in a battle. And then playing weaker competition is good too, because you can't guarantee a win, but if you have times where you can get wins, it's good for any team, right? Any team. And it's how you play against, like when you play against high level teams. So I'll just take it a different tangent here. This is from an individual or from maybe a coaching standpoint too. So a lot of times you have players that are good when the stakes aren't high, and then you'll have players that rise to the occasion, the tougher the game or the more important the game. So when they're really getting tested, sometimes you'll see a guy that, or guys that you thought were going to really excel, and they don't. And then guys that, oh, this is their type of game. It's almost like a playoff game every time, and they rise to the occasion, and vice versa, right? You'll see some kids that are, when they play against weaker teams, they just feast on them and they can look really good. And then when they play against, and then you get other guys that they kind of blend in more, because it's not that competitive sometimes. You maybe see different attitudes on teams, right? Like that's why it's good to play against good medium and lesser level teams, because you see individual attitudes come in too, right?
So how, if we take it like more individually, how much do you think it affects kids in terms of like exposure? Like this is the biggest concern that I hear people talk about, coming from dads, coaches, whatever. It's like, you got to be in the Marlies tournament. You got to get into OHL Cup. You have to play against in the Michigan loop against those teams, or go to Chicago. Like how much do you, in your opinion, how much have you, or how much do you think that actually affects how you're scouted, where you're scouted, whether or not scouts come to see you, and those types of things? Because I find, like I said, that's the biggest question, where people feel like they have to force it, you know?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. And if you would have asked me even a couple years ago, I would have said that it doesn't matter that much, because if you're a good player, people see you and they take notice. But I've had a lot of conversations with a couple of GMs lately, or over the last couple of years, and they, as a year kind of drags on, when they're scouting and making the nitty gritty calls or looking for players, they want to see the better teams actually. And it makes sense. You have more guys to look at. If you have a good team, it does lend some positives to getting scouted. Now, providing that you're a high end player. I mean, some guys can blend in there, but like if you're a good player on a good team, it's probably going to help you. But that doesn't mean that if you're on a weaker team that you haven't been looked at all. Like you get looked at, but like when it comes down to like you might end up, if it's like questionable, like I have a guy that was drafted, I'm not going to say who and where, but he was drafted early enough that it was like, okay, that's a good pick. But there was a lot of doubt that guys talked to me about, because of, I wasn't the biggest guy, and the team that it was just, I would say, poorly coached. And they didn't win a lot, and they were like lower level AAA. But he went fairly high in the draft. I think if he would have played on a team where it was very well coached, where there was a little bit more structure, where you could see, oh, away from the puck, he cares. And he cared. He just didn't know what to do. So when you're playing on a team that like everything goes wrong, it could be harder to find like your, not your standout player, because a guy that can carry the puck and do that or hit like crazy, that sticks out. But when so if that kid had a choice last year, if he played on a team that was like a top 15 team in Ontario, let's say, he probably would have went just a little bit higher. But it didn't affect his draft status that much because he was pretty good. People saw what they needed to see. But at the end of the day, when it comes down to you're going to really hone in on your scouting, they're looking at, you know, like the deeper you go, it does make a little bit of a difference. Okay. But you still have to be good.
So this is now where I would, if we zoom, so let's say in the short term, wrapping up what you're saying is it could make some difference on the margins. Like if you're a good player, instead of you going fourth round, maybe you go second round, or instead of you not getting drafted, maybe you get drafted 12th round or whatever. But you still have to be good.
Yeah. Now, so like if you're like, and this is what a lot of kids do, right? Like, and this is, I think maybe your issue that what you're talking about is when people move teams and they feel like, using the like a GTHL team, or is it, what's it called, GTHL now? If you use a GTHL team as your measuring stick here in Ontario, and if you go like in some of the higher end programs are like the Marlies, the Junior Canadians, let's say, and if you feel like, oh, if I can play there, I'll get drafted higher. Well, you got to also remember that there's, if that's a top team, you may or may not be a top player. So there, that's a different thing. So maybe if you're, you know, if you're truly a fourth or a fifth round pick in the OHL, maybe you don't stand out that much. It's probably not going to make you a third round pick. It might help you a little bit, but flaws can be seen, right? Because you're playing with, you know, probably a couple first round picks on your team, second round picks and stuff like that. So you're just a little bit deeper in the depth chart.
Yep. So with that though, so now if we say, let's say in the short term, there's benefit, right? Let's say in the short term, there's a little bit more exposure, maybe you go a little bit higher. Again, in your experience, how do you see that playing out over their junior career, and how does it affect their prospects of actually becoming a player? So, for example, I'm a eighth round pick. I played for the Marlies. Maybe if I would have played in Windsor, I would have been a 12th round pick. How much does that actually affect them as a player going through their junior career? Like, in your opinion, what do you see there?
Yeah. Well, I think it's totally short term. Like, I think it makes a difference, and it's really good for your ego to get drafted higher, to get like NHL too, right? You feel a lot better being a first or second round pick than a sixth, right?
Yep.
So if you're shooting to get drafted as high as you can, and you hang your hat on that, then it's important. But I can tell you, and we can go, I don't have the lineup right now, but I'll just take the, like, every team we play has several players that were picked later in the draft.
Mm.
Like, I'm thinking on Guelph. Actually, can I take a second
look? Yeah.
Okay. So here, I got Guelph Storm, right? So we've got a first round pick, a second round pick, a second round pick, a third round pick, a second round pick, a fifth round pick, a ninth round pick. First round pick, fifth round pick, second round pick, second round pick. That's an import. First round pick, third round pick. Not doing us very good here. Fourth round pick. Third, ninth, 10th, 14th round, third round. And the other 11th round. So we talked about this on a podcast before. So obviously there's your first two rounds, three rounds, typically, you know, your top 60 rated player, more or less. So gives you at least a sniff. But honestly, you watch this, like I said this earlier in the season, when you go to training camps and all of a sudden you see someone stick out like a sore thumb and they were drafted late and they sign, right? Like, so one of our guys, we got a few guys on our team. I'm not going to mention their names. It wouldn't be really that nice. No, it's nice, actually. It's a compliment, but I'm not going to point them out. But, like, they were 5th, 7th, 9th, 11th round picks. Like, Jerv, one of our guys, 11th round pick or 12th round pick, you can make it. So I think short term, your ego says, oh, wow, I'm a first, second, or third round pick, fourth round pick, like, got a chance to make it.
That roster there, it's probably, like, two-thirds top three rounds and then a third later.
Yep.
And it's like, that's still a good crop of players on every team, because it's probably pretty similar every team.
Every team's got some really late round picks, a free agent here and there. Right? Like, it happens all the time. When you go to camp, it's like, yes, like, I'm not going to lie and say that if you're drafted, you know, top 40, that your chances of making it are slim and none. No, your chances of at least signing are probably 90% if you're a second round pick, right? It's what you do after it. And that's where you see, like, in training camp, guys just, you can't help but keep them around, and then they play and perform. And you'll see a lot of guys that are late picks be really, really good players. So the point of where you play in midget, is it important to get drafted? It might help you get drafted. But if your goal is just, like we talk about all the time, the short term, if your goal is to get drafted and then you say, I'm a great hockey player after that, it's just one thing. Once the season starts, it really, I mean, the more I'm around it too, like the last few years, the more I see, it's like it really, you have to perform. You really do have to perform. Yes, do some guys get a little bit of a leash? Yes, 100%. But you do have to perform. And if you're not performing, there's other guys that will. And it's clear as day. And I'm really adamant on that in the NHL draft, right? Is you see guys signing at 19 years old, ELC, that's an entry-level contract, and they weren't drafted. Like, how do you go through it, right? So if you win a championship with whatever team, so last year it was in the OHL was Peterborough, does that make everybody get drafted? Like, you're more eyes on you. More eyes on you could mean good or bad, right? Depending on how you respond to that. So I think if you're looking at long term, like I always say this, you look at your draft or any success that you have, it's really good, but you have to make sure that you live up to it. And a lot of things that come into play there, it could be pressure. It could be, you know, we talk about guys like all the time. They were just bigger and like in midget, especially or U16, we call it now. If you're just physically bigger and stronger, and you can get away with a lot of things without having really good habits, because you can just get away with it. But as you move on to those different levels, you know, a lot of people go, well, what happened to him? He was so good. You know, yeah, he was drafted high, but his ceiling was almost met at that point. Whereas you get guys, like, you see it all the time. Guys just grow 17 years old, and they grow 2 more inches, and they get a little bit bigger, and they're different players, or they understand that, okay, I got to work so hard to get my next shift. And I got to practice hard, and they get in the gym more, and they do all these little things. And those little steps might seem like it's insignificant. We talk about this all the time, right? Is, you know, if you start, you want to lose some weight. It's like everyone wants to lose it in a week. But when you go for lunch with your buddies and you have the burger and fries, it's like, it doesn't seem like it's going to end like it'd be the end all be all decision, but it's one decision, and it's every decision you make adds up. So the kids that go in and they're later picks or free agents or whatever, they got to fight for every inch. And if they do it with the right attitude and they watch the video and they do all these different things and they understand the systems and they play it to a T, and all of a sudden they become really good players, it's not shocking. And it happens at every level all the time.
So we looked at, my voice keeps distracting me. We looked at one, I don't remember what it was. I think last week we looked at one. Okay. So, let me back up. I'm in a unique position at my age now where it's been about 10 to 15 years since all of the noteworthy players that I played with have now either had a career in hockey or not. So I have the benefit of, in my demographic, looking back and seeing who were the top guys, where did they come from, what did they do, and where did they end up. And so we did this last week. We looked at the top three teams in Ontario in my OHL draft year, which would have been 2010. And we look through all three of the rosters of these three teams. So on those three teams, you got 15 players, 2 goalies. So that's 51 players over the three teams. There might have been like 7 or 8 that had a noteworthy career. Noteworthy being defined as made like an NHL career, or they made like a decent amount of money playing hockey, whether it was in Europe or whatever. There might have been 7 guys or so out of 51. Out of 51. Now, I guarantee you, I didn't look at this at the time that we were checking it, but I bet you each of those teams had 5 to 9 draft picks on each of those teams to the OHL, right? So it's hard to know that. Like, you can't know that when you're going through it. It's because you're in the middle of doing it, right? But it's important that you keep that context in mind, because to your point, is it about let's get drafted as high as possible, or do you actually want to be a pro? Because the correlation from draft to pro is still a very, very small percentage, you know? And I'm sure it's more than the guy that was the free agent, but at the end of the day, that's not the end place is not get drafted as high as possible, you know? So I still really believe if you move around place to place, or you go to a better team because you think the exposure is better, I agree that it could help your draft prospects or whatever. But I really believe if you're good enough to get drafted, or good enough where people notice who you are, you'll be given opportunity, whether it's as a third round pick or a 10th round pick or a free agent, and you'll just keep chipping away at it.
It's really hard to hide a good hockey player. Yeah. It's really hard.
I still believe that, even though like all this stuff about like the showcases and all that, there's truth to that to some degree. But I really believe like if you are good, like someone's going to give you a chance, someone's going to find you, someone's going to give you an opportunity, and then it's up to you to either take it or not. Because if you study the, you know, you read off the roster of all the first to third round picks on the team, and how many of those guys, they end up dying in junior, you know, they die in junior, they play their junior hockey, and they don't even go on to U Sports after, they don't even go on to any level of minor pro or whatever, and they were the top of the top going through junior, right? So it's important you keep that kind of stuff in mind when you're having these conversations at youth levels about we have to go to, you know, Florida or Boston or Dallas or St. Louis to play the best showcase possible. It's like, maybe it's helpful, but maybe it's unnecessary too.
It's so funny. Like, and I don't know if you really get it until you have some actual experience, because, and I understand where parents and coaches think, okay, everything matters, and everything does matter. Like, everything does matter, but everything doesn't matter. So what I mean by that people are in such a rush, and would I be guilty of it? Yeah, probably to a certain degree, because you as a parent, you always want your children, even if you say, you know, struggle is good and all that stuff, it's always good, but when it's you, it's different, right? So if you get drafted, so like for example, my son was a high draft pick, so you know, you're just hoping that it goes okay. You get drafted, you get on the ice, you play, you get x, you know, maybe x amount of goals, you get this kind of ice time, that would be good, play on this line, that would be good, and then the next year should be this, and you know, you're making a plan, like everyone does it, right? And so if your first year doesn't go the way you thought it was, then I see people panic, like, what the hell, it's the end of the world. It's like, no, like if you're 16, which my son was 15 at the time, it's 5 years. There's 5 years, right? Where you see a kid that comes in and it's like they don't, but like, so major junior hockey, OHL, CHL, whatever, like you really, it doesn't really matter what type of player, like you'll be the player around 18, 19, mostly 19. That's what the league is about. So we forget that 2-3 year gap of developing is like every little thing you do, the habits you create is what is going to make you the player. But I see it, you know. And I was part of it with my family and the kids that my kid plays with. It's like, you just want more for your kid, and you think it's unfair. Well, why is this guy getting that? And it's like, it's a process, and it takes time. And, you know, like people do miss, like the scouting world misses things, or maybe things didn't go exactly to your advantage the first year or two or three. Again, if you're a good player, it works out. And here's what I mean. So off the top of my head, Logan Morrison. Okay. Yeah. So he'd be 21. He was an overage last year. So this guy had points, man. Played on the championship team and got traded to Ottawa for a pile of picks because he just puts up points smart. And I was going, I wonder what's wrong, because he hasn't got drafted. He was a first-round pick in the OHL. He didn't get drafted in the NHL. Like, he's putting up points. He's doing everything right. Why? Are they missing him? Well, it's not like he's not doing anything. He's putting up a ton of points. So why didn't he get drafted? Like, do you quit? Are things not going your way? Well, he finishes his overage career. Then he signs with, I believe it was Seattle. Like, before the season ended, signed a contract with Seattle. Well, I guess it worked out.
Yeah, at 21.
But you can really focus on, I didn't get drafted, right? There's another guy, Cartier, what's his first name? Played in the Sioux. So he was like, Charlie's underage. He was an overage. Same thing. Really good hockey player. How did he go undrafted? Sign with Seattle. Arbor Jack guy. Your time comes if you're a good player. So I think going back to your point about competition and all that stuff, it's so easy, and I get it. You get it. I get it. When you want things now, you want things to go right. You don't. That's what you want. But the short term doesn't make that much of a difference. It's only like for your own ego.
And when we're talking about like when you say you want this to be good now and whatever, it's like, who's you? And a lot of times it's coach, mom and dad, parents, because the kids don't know any
different.
Sometimes
the kids don't.
A lot of the times the kids don't know.
So when they're youth hockey players playing hockey, they're just playing hockey.
So I'm thinking let's take an example of like a U15 team, yeah. Right? Whether they go to Florida and play the best teams, right, or whether they go to the Marlies tournament and play the best teams, like, they don't know the difference in terms of how is this going to affect my playing career, you know? So for them, they're just playing. Yeah. Like, they just
A tournament's a tournament.
Right?
So, Peterborough lift lock tournament's just as good as anything.
Right. Yeah. So my point is, like, when we're talking about development, it's the adults that make the decision, you know? So when you're making the choices of where do we go, what do? You need to have some of this context in mind. Like, take your Bell Tire team. That was a super team, right? How many of those guys are playing in the NHL on that team? None, right? None.
A couple draft picks, yeah. Few draft picks.
Couple college commitments, couple college.
OHLs, yeah.
So all it's looks typical. Good. Yeah, and yeah. It's typical, right? And so at the end of the day, if the goal is we want to make these kids NHLers, it's like, just pump the brakes, man. Like, you want to give them the best opportunity they can have, but it doesn't have to be anything that's ridiculously crazy. It really doesn't, because they're going to develop. Like, I'm flashing to that psychology study they did about, like, when rats play, you need to win 30% of the wrestling matches or you don't want to play anymore. So if, like, a big rat and a small rat wrestle, the small rat has to win at least 30% of the time or doesn't want to play anymore. And that translates very well to humans. It's like, if you are against competition that's too difficult all the time, just because you think you need to go play against better teams all the time, that's not necessarily better, you know? Conversely, if you're always just smashing every team you play, that's not good either, right? It's like that, you kind of pointed out at the start, you have to spend some time playing equal competition, spend some time playing against teams or players that are better, and then players that are weaker, so you can work on stuff, you know? That's the whole method of getting better at whatever you're doing. So when we're talking about development, my point, I guess, of this whole spiel is, it's not always better is better, you know? It's not always like more is better, better is better. And I think that is the mindset that a lot of adults, whether it's the coaches or parents, get wrapped into, that, you know, better players, better competition, better coaching, better this, better that, and to a degree, right? But at a certain point, it's like, they're still just kids. They only care so much because they don't really know the difference, right? So you can impose your adult mindset onto the kid, like, but they just play. Like, they're not thinking what's the best in terms of my development the way the adults are.
It's funny because, you know, when I talk to kids, a lot of the times they're going to, let's say it's the Toronto Marley tournament, and who are you guys lined up with? And they'll say, Marley's, Little Caesars, and we'll go a smaller center, Hamilton, whatever, something like that. I go, ooh, you know, I'll throw out, like, oh, Marley's a big game, eh? And they're like, oh, yeah. They don't really, I mean, some of them really know what it is, but they just say, yeah, we'll play the Marlies. We're going to try to beat them. But whereas parents, it's like, okay, man, like, hope we don't get killed 10-0 or something, right? So I would say you're mostly right. It gets, that message gets sent down from parents.
Yeah. And now I don't, because this happens every time, and I'm just throwing the disclaimer out there. I'm not saying don't ever go to a good tournament or never, like, stay away from the strong competition. Like, I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying, like, there's some balance that is appropriate when we're talking about this stuff. It doesn't have to be everything's the 100% best, because the kids can't be attentive to the 100% best all the time anyways, right? You can't even do it as an adult. Like, you can't do it. You can't do it at work, you know? So I wanted to move on to a little bit more, like, specifics. Another conversation we're talking about was, like, game versus practice time. I know this kind of gets into, like, the ice time topic that you like to talk about. So I kind of want to let you go on a go on a rip about that a little bit, but one of the conversations we're having was how many games are good to play during the year. So we had one of the guys we were talking to said they've played like 70 something games at U15. Another guy said that we play 55, 60. And then I look at, you know, if you look at the college model, they play like 30 or something, right? Yep. So, and then you look at CHL and they're playing 68 or 70 or whatever. 68
plus playoffs and preseason. So
right? So
closer to 80.
So where does your mindset kind of line up on the actual in-game play? And then we'll kind of balance that with versus, you know, practice time, skill development time, whatever. Yeah. And then you can talk about.
So we're talking time. Youth hockey. I think, yeah. I think if you can get a couple games a week for, you know, the season, perfect. A couple games a week. Well, I mean, of course, everybody, all the kids want to play every day for sure. But I think there's something about, that hunger again to play. I think there's got to be a desire to really look forward to Friday night and Sunday afternoon hockey game, or Friday, Saturday hockey game, and sprinkle in some tournaments and stuff. That's important. But I think it's like very, very important to really look forward to playing. And like anything, if you do something every day, that becomes monotonous or you take it for granted.
It's just, so that would be like 55, 60 games a season just for people. If you played like 2 games a week, that's about what that would end up
being. And the reason I say that with kids is like, you can sit there and try to make the perfect development model, right? Everybody tries, and the ratio should be 3-1 or 2-1 or whatever. And it should be this much of this, this much of this. And it's like, that's fine. But you got to take in consideration. Let's say that 2 is too many. Okay, for a youth hockey players, should only have one. I'm throwing it out. I don't mean this, but if it's you play one game a week because development is more important, it's like, okay, but what are we doing as when we signed up for hockey as kids? Did we sign up to develop as a hockey player or to play hockey? And I think a lot of times when we're doing things with our youth, is we look at things like everyone is going to be a star or everybody is so serious about getting to the next levels, and some will, some won't be focused on that. But I think when people sign up for hockey, I think they forget that kids want to play hockey. So like, even going back, like when we talk about development models, I told you this before, I'm sure, I was watching some practices over time, or parents talking about their practices, and like the real young kids, they do power skating and stick out. I'm talking really young. My brother-in-law had his kid doing that. And he goes, like, he's so bored.
Yeah, like, how old are we talking?
Well, I'm talking like starting hockey.
Yeah, like 5, 6,
yeah,
seven.
Yeah, 5, 6, 7. Like in Hockey Canada, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I like small area games, and they mandate you can't play a full ice game until they're whatever age. Whatever the thing is, they're playing a game. But my thing is that kids didn't sign up. Like, you think a 6-year-old watches. I remember Charlie was like that as a kid. He goes, when do we play? They want to play hockey. They don't want to develop hockey. You know what I mean? And there's a point where you have to do some practice and some skill stuff with kids for sure. But when you sign up as a little kid, ask a kid, what's hockey? What do you want to do in hockey? I want to play games. That's why at the end of a practice, if you give them 5 minutes of a scrimmage, you've saved the day. You could bag them for 45 minutes, give them 5 minutes of scrimmage, and it was a great practice. Right? So I think it gets lost that playing games is important. So going back to the youth hockey thing, 2 to me is like the perfect ratio. 2 games and maybe 2 practices. That's fine. You know, you get 2-3 practices a week. That's a lot of hockey, right? But it's important that you have the games in there for kids. And I wouldn't overthink that too much. But then too much is too much. Now you're just getting. You should learn how to practice and.
Yeah. Well, and just going to the planning part of it too, like just especially because we're involved with some of that stuff now, and like I always find myself. The person in the conversation that's saying like, okay, like let's pump the brakes a little on all the planning. Like this looks like a program for a junior team or 19, 20-year-olds or pro, which that looks good on paper. But even like I got the young kids that are learning like foundations of lifting in the gym. It's like after 30 minutes of that, they want to wrestle. Like they want to play a game. And so we do that because you want it to be fun, like, and they still get to develop their athleticism through fun means. But when you try to overstructure and overcomplicate and make it like they're playing for North Dakota, it's like, they can't handle it, man. It's too much and they don't like it. That's the other thing. It's like, they actually don't like it, you know? So when you're talking like practices, games, whatever, I think games, you could have an endless amount. It just is more like a logistics thing where like it's expensive and time consuming and whatever. But then when it comes to your practice times and your skill sessions and all this stuff, the younger you go, the more difficult it is to maintain structured like practice and skill development time, because they check out, man.
Yep.
They check out.
With the academy.
Totally.
It's like they ask every day, can we play a game today?
Yeah.
Every day, because they're 13 you.
Yeah, right?
Every day.
Which, of course, that's what they want to do, yep. Right? So it's like, okay, we'll do 20 minutes, 30 minutes of whatever, and then we'll play games after and try to, like, yeah, teach them stuff, whatever, while they're doing it. But they have to just let them play. That's where the development will happen in terms of their actual gameplay type stuff, you know? But you can really get caught up on the details of, you know, how much ice, how many games, how many practices, all this. And I said this before, it's almost like it's majoring in the minors a little bit, because the more important details are like, who is teaching them? Like, what is being taught? How is it being taught? Where like the focus being on the amount of time seems to take precedent over the quality a lot of times, you know? And so for me, it's always that quality over quantity thing. Like if we have a great coach that's with the kids twice a week, that's way better than five times a week of crap, you know? So again, it's just a message more for coaches, parents, people involved in making the plans, right?
For me too. Like if I was to say practices, I would I wouldn't do hour and a half practices or hour 20s. Like if I had a choice, but understanding that youth hockey, you got to get your kids there. It's really a 50-minute practice if it's an hour for, you know, when you take the flood in consideration. But a well-run practice in 50 minutes is like perfect. Once you get past that hour, like once you get to the 110, 115 typically, unless you're very good at running practices or you can learn how to incorporate skills and stuff like that, like I find there's a point where diminishing returns. And that's where I think maybe you just have some fun. But you can't sell that to parents and to people because you got to get them there. It's like, you know, 50 minutes goes by like that. So I get it. But, you know, if I had the choice, like, so if it's my, like the academy that we're working at, if I had a choice, I'd say you get 1 hour, 50 minutes. And what it does is like, you only have 50 minutes or that 1 hour. So in that hour, make sure it's good. Make sure you work hard. And you can get a lot done in that 1 hour, which is, to me, more beneficial than the hour and a half.
Yeah, and you leave them wanting more as opposed
that's
to
for me.
Running
that's
it
for
out.
Me.
Yeah.
So I'd rather them like, so the academy model is you get there, you go on the ice, then you have your gym or school or whatever it is. But that hour is, you know, used properly.
Yeah. So let's go into that a little bit. So I want you to talk about, again, your experience, and I have the same thing, whether it's on the ice, off the ice, whatever, when it comes to the development thing, I want you to go on your tangent about how do you see the behavior of players change when there's too much ice or when there's too much opportunity to do things. So the reason I want to go into this again is because a lot of times the people that are making the plan are not the people that are actually on the ice interacting with the kids. So this is the kind of a common theme we're talking about is like things sound good on paper or things sound good when you talk about them. Yeah. But in reality, what are some of the changes that you see in the behavior of kids? And it's not just youth. Youth is probably even more true, but even up through the older age groups.
Yeah. Okay, so like I'll just take running a hockey camp, right? The brochure always is, you know, not always, but like the one that sells is going to be, let's say it's in a week, you know, 20 hours of ice. 4 or 5 days times, yeah, 4 or 5, you know, 15 to 20 hours of ice. You get the gym, you get this, it's a jam-packed day. And it's like, it sounds the best on paper, but the reality is, if you're actually doing the work, it's like, number one, the kids are typically not checked in for that long. It's not possible. Or you might have a really good day, and day two or day three is just like hump day. It's like you got to pump their tires, and they're just, you know, it's just like overkill. So let's take the brochure with a team now. Like if you have the ability to have a team where you can do the recruiting in youth hockey, whatever, doesn't matter what level, but youth hockey, right? And you got, so let's just say it is an academy style and it's like, okay, every day on the ice, like every day on the ice from 8 to 9:30, mom and dad and people around go, oh, that's pretty good. You're on the ice every day for 5 days a week. You know, that's like,
a ton of development.
Yeah, it's a ton of a development. More ice. Okay, this is awesome. Then you get the gym, and then there's practice and this. It's like, okay, this is the best, but it's like, is it really? And what I see is, and it's very frustrating to me, but it's hard to change anything, is explaining to people that your player has too much ice because it's so physically noticeable. It's noticeable in, okay, so for example, when you have, let's say it's the 8 o'clock in the morning ice time every day, why, if your kid was excited, like a player that's excited about hockey would never be, never, ever step on the ice 1 second late. They, in fact, especially there's no rentals earlier, you will be on the ice early if you're excited. So you could say, yeah, but he doesn't get there till, because I've been this guy. Can't drop him off till 5:02. If it was me, I would have been dressed at home. Because there's, no, I'm being honest, there's not a chance I would give up 1 second of ice if I could. And my parents used to laugh or used to go, like, relax. Go, no, I could be on the ice first. It was so important to me. So I'd be, if we had an after school thing, I'd be getting dressed in the car, like rushing. I'd get, like without my skates, everything would be on. Then I'd get to the rink, do the skates up, and I'd be at the first one on the ice. And it was like so important to me. It was so important to me because I loved hockey. And we had a coach, Mr. Rose, that found extra ice too. So he maybe there was even too much, but that was the way I was. I had to be on the ice. I used every second of it the best that I can remember. So if a kid was really, really excited about hockey, that 8 o'clock ice, they'd be on 10 minutes early for sure. As soon as they got dropped off, it wouldn't take more than 2 minutes, right? But what happens is they get it every day. So what you'll see, week one to week two to week three, all of a sudden one guy is a little bit later. Then there's the farting around, because if I don't go on at 8 o'clock exactly, if there's no discipline, then I'll be on later. It's not a big deal. And you can just see it. So that's, like, to me, the first sign. The second sign is that just getting, blowing the whistle to get their attention, to draw a drill. Like it becomes more lackadaisical. You can see it in their eyes. And then obviously the intensity just dwindles. And it's not to say they don't work hard, but that's what I was saying to some of the guys last week. I said, you guys got to learn how to work hard. But it's not necessarily their fault, because they get so much, right? It's like, enjoy your steak, man. I made your steak again. Like, you thought you said you like steak. Like, eat it. There's some left. Like, yeah, but Dad, you give me steak every day. Like, I like it, but like, it's now it's just okay, right? So that's what I see, is I can visually see it. There's so much ice.
So two questions. One, at what age do you feel like that starts to kind of go away, where maybe it's that players start treating it more like a job, or like I mentioned last week, they can see the delayed gratification, where maybe at 18, I want to have morning skate and then practice and morning skate and then practice and morning skate and then practice because I feel like I can use this ice? Or do you not see a change? Does that question make sense?
Yeah, I'm just trying to
process,
just tighten it up.
Okay. And then my second question is going to be, where would you draw the line in terms of number of skates per week? Because I'm thinking with these younger kids, it's like, okay, they got 1, 2, 3 times a week on the ice at the academy. Then they have 1, 2, 3 team practices, and then at least 2 games. And that looks like,
that's not including some of them that do other skills.
Right, other skills, whatever. So let's say at a minimum, we're talking 8 times per week minimum for some of these younger kids. 2 games, 6 practices of some sort. Some of them it's more. So at what point do you see that? That's question one, is what's the number for you? Just your thoughts. And then at what age do you think that is less of an issue, where more, it's still not necessarily better, but do you feel like kids use more ice more effectively or efficiently, or do you not see that when they get older?
Well, although that's always a depend, I think. Okay, so let's go with the youth guys. So they're on the ice designed by their whatever hockey institution tells them to be there. That's practice and games. And if it's 5 times a week, 6, 7, whatever it is, then it is what it is. That's what you have to use. But I would want that to be used properly for my kid, for all kids. If you go out and find more stuff, that's, you know, it's fine. But I don't know if there's a number, because it depends on the individual. The player that loves it will do it. But what I would say, if I could, again, if I'm designing everything, I would have my 2 practices a week, very good practices. I'd have my games. So that could be 4 to 6 times, right? I wouldn't want to do a whole lot more than that because, like, as kids, I think they, it's important that they just have some time off, because I think the adults forget how, especially being on the ice with them, you can just see when they're tired, when they're or not 100% invested. So I think the caveat to that would be the kid that likes to do things on their own. So I have no problem, like none whatsoever. If a kid, not the parents, the kid, when he gets home, he likes to find that patch of ice somewhere. Dad, there's a game, I can play in a game, because it's not a structured thing, it's a fun thing. I would actually say no limits to that. So if you had a rink in your backyard, right, we live in, it's getting tougher to find right now, but that wintertime ice, when I would say not to do this, but it's better than actual practice because it's just you being you. And for kids that spend hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours doing that, I think that's, there's never enough, because that's a choice. You're doing it. And then there's no one, you're not ruining anybody else's life by if you just practice toe drags for 3 hours. That's what you choose to do. It's like, it's a self-imposed discipline, right? So it, I just find it's like the more that you do practices and the environment of where there's someone teaching and all that stuff, I think it wears on kids. But that same kid that, he can come to a practice and be kind of lackadaisical. He might spend 5 nights a week as soon as he gets home from practice or before school on that patch of ice and do something and be in total love, and you got a whole different person. So that part, I think it's unlimited. But I, when you're designing it as a team or a institution, I think you need to limit it to get the best out of them. Then what part, your next question is, when does it matter to use that extra ice?
At what age, if you do see it, maybe you don't, but at what age do you find that's less of an issue where players are just more engaged than with more ice, they're retaining more and they're staying more engaged with the more ice. So for example, with the younger group we've been talking about that you're skating with in the morning, it's like they get a little squirrely, they're not really trying hard, they're late, some of this. Then with the older group in the last few weeks, you're like, they're really getting better. They both have too much ice by, if we apply the same standard. So like, where do you see the transition around? What age do you feel like they can handle maybe a little bit more volume on that side?
Honestly, I don't think there's an answer to that. I think the answer lies in the individual, because you can look at the OHL and NHL. Well, here's a question for you. If using that example, why does Sidney Crosby spend more time on the ice? Why was Jaromir Jagr like relentless at their work ethic? Why? Because they choose to, right? There's guys on that team that have half the talent of those guys that do half the work. Maybe that's the reason. But Sidney Crosby chose to do face-offs for half an hour or an hour, whatever it was. Jagr chose to do extra, skate in the middle of the night, because it was a mental decision that he felt that it needs to get better. I could tell you that in junior, like in the OHL, CHL, college, ice is available, workouts are available, the gym's available, rehab's available, and everybody knows that if you want to get better, spending maybe it's 20 minutes on just shooting or a specific thing, because it's there, you're going to be a better hockey player. Why don't more people use it? Because now it's, to me, that's the answer. Because all these years, parents have been pushing work, 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 work. And we've said before is once they get away from you, do they do the work? Right? So then I think there's a point where at a level where you're choosing to, maybe this is a little bit much, but there are 14-year-olds that think, oh, I need to do extra work, and they self-impose that and they do it. Okay. But for the most part, is when guys realize that, oh, this is like my job now, and I have X amount of time to be a pro or whatever, or to be on the first line or whatever, power play, I need to work on things, that they self-impose that. And I think that's when it becomes beneficial, when they're out there with a purpose, their own purpose, right? So they recognize, okay, my skating's not quite up to snuff. We have a power skating coach. I need to get on with him once or twice a week for the year. And then they know that it's not going to be the day one, maybe not day two, maybe it's a month, maybe 2 months down the road, things start to get better. And I think that's the answer, to be honest with you, so as you get older.
So it's like you feel like they have just like a little bit more maturity where they can see the opportunities that they have and that they can get better with the older group. Right. So do you think that the way that those groups are divided for us, just as an example, it's up until the first group goes up to 2010 born, and then the next group is 2009 and older. So do you feel like that is a good kind of cutoff where that maturity starts to set in, which is like the puberty age again, which is funny, right? It's always kind of around that age. So do you feel like that's kind of where you see more of the maturity start to seep in?
Yeah,
where they
like,
can get
yeah,
that?
Because you'll see like, and there's, it goes both ways though. You'll see like, why is it that you take, let's say we got 10, 17 year olds. And why is it that at 17, you got three of them that are going to do extra work and three are going to just do whatever's there. And then three or four do the minimum, they're late and whatever. It's like at that point, people realize, I think a lot of the times is that there's something more for them in hockey. I need to keep going and work hard. The guys in the middle are like, they're either just don't see it, don't want to do it, or they realize that I'm just going to see what happens. You know what I mean? I know that most people probably could not understand that, but like to actually do the extra work is work, right? It means not hanging out in the dressing room. It means not socializing at night. It's like maybe extra. And then the other third sitting there going, like, I'm not going anywhere. Why am I going to spend any more time? Right? Like, and really, why would you work really hard at something if there is no reward that you can possibly see?
It takes a real certain kind of person to understand that you can learn from working hard at things that you're not really going to be doing later. That takes a very particular person, which is interesting.
So it's a different answer. It's just a perspective that I have. I've seen it, like, I got so many kids close to me that, you know, they basically tell me that. And what people forget, this is the part where you'd think, well, you're crazy not using the extra ice, the extra workout, whatever. You're crazy for not doing it. It's like, yeah, but what you forget is how fast, when hockey becomes hockey, how much of a job it actually becomes. And even though you might be playing college, maybe you'd be playing in the CHL, people might say, well, no, what are you talking about? It's the best. It's like, it is the best, but you forget how much of a job this actually is. You are on the ice pretty much every day. And then the summer times, you're training pretty much every single day. Hockey is... it is the best, but it's also like, I just need a break.
Dude, you know, I was just going to say the biggest factor for me that I remember that people don't account for as a variable is that you're always tired and sore every single day of your life. You're tired and sore. Like, it was 15 years of being tired and sore. Like, you never sleep enough and you're never rested enough when you're going at it almost every day, you know? So, and that's the thing that's what makes it like, I don't want to do the yoga. I'm tired. Like, I don't want to do the mobility. I don't want to get in the ice bath, man. Like, getting in the right. Right. And you think, like, if as a person from the outside, it's like you have access to an ice bath. Like, holy shit. And it's like, yeah, man, but I'm freaking gassed. I'm tired. Getting in the ice bath sucks. And I don't want to do it.
We're on the road.
Know? Yeah.
We lost 2-1-3, whatever it is. We practice hard all week. Coach just went over video for the same time. We just had another meeting about our stupid power play. I'm just tired, and I don't feel like shooting 50 pucks right now.
I slept on the floor of the bus.
Yeah, yeah, like, whatever, right? Whatever, yeah. Or whatever. Yeah, and it's like people forget that it's an everyday thing. And when you do something every day, and this is the other thing, right? When parents and coaches that are listening, sometimes when we're looking at our kids and we know what's the best, we all know what's the best for us, but we got to look at ourselves too and say, did we give our best every day all the time? Did you, whatever your job is, did you actually spend the extra 15 minutes after work or get there 15 minutes before to make sure your day was perfect and planned out and you got ahead of the game? Or did you just punch in that day, that week, that year, that month, whatever, right? And then it's easy to do. So I think a lot of the times when we're looking at what we expect from our kids and our players. And it's, a lot of people say, well, yeah, but it's their time and, we got to teach them. And that's very true, but we got to look at ourselves too. And it's like, do you get up every day and do you go 100% make all the right decisions? And that's because it's not to give the kids an out, but it's just reality. Because I know for me, I try to do my best every day, but I know sometimes I the shortcuts I take, I go, why'd you take a shortcut today? You did. You could have controlled that, but you chose not to.
Yeah.
Right.
That's a really good bow to finish up, because that's my, I guess my thread of talking about this stuff is, as the grown-ups or the people making the decisions, you can try to enforce the perfection or enforce the ideal situation. But then when it comes to it practically, things are a lot different, you know? So it's one thing, you want to have a good plan and you want to have the perfect plan and you want to have the ideal plan, but you have to be able to work in the fact that practically speaking or in reality, it's not going to go exactly the way that you are putting it down on paper, which you can only know if you have experience doing this stuff with the players or with the kids that are involved. Because if you've never been through it, or you don't know what it's like, or you haven't coached or whatever, then you can really miss that. And a good parallel is exactly that, looking at your own work life. Like, what do you do at work? How do you treat that job? Are you doing everything perfect all the time? You know, and you think because it's a sport and the kids are having fun and it's something that they love to do, that those things don't still apply, but they all still apply. You know, because everyone's just a person. We're just humans and we make mistakes and we don't do things perfectly and we don't live up to the ideal ever. So that was kind of the thread through that I wanted to pick up on, which is kind of nice because you ended up kind of wrapping on it anyways. So is there anything else you think is worth talking about for in terms of like youth kind of competitive hockey development type stuff? I think we kind of hit on all the things I want to talk about.
Yeah, obviously it could go. There's like when I'm at the rinks right now, it's like it's amazing. Thank you, by the way, how many people recognize from the podcast, and it's very nice. But you know, it's the same questions a lot. That question about changing teams was brought up to me yesterday by someone, and it's like there's so many ways you can go with that, and it's like I think it's hard, as hard as it might seem, or whatever. The decision you make at the youth levels are not going to be killers. And what happens is at 14, 15, 16, you're drafted first round or 12th round or not drafted. It's not the end of the world. So I think parents just think the number one thing is make sure your kids are having fun learning and working hard, play hard, and just don't get too caught up in stuff, because things change, man. Things change so much. Like, that's just the bottom line. It does. It's hard to see as a parent sometimes, because you want to make good decisions for your kids, but who you play and all that stuff, it's just accept where you're at.
Yeah.
You know,
majoring,
I don't know,
in the minors. That's good.
I don't know. I got lots of stuff, but
yeah, we'll keep ripping on it next week, because I got to go now. So
yeah. Okay.
Okay. See you later.
Cheers.